Right, what is happening, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Unplayable. Con here, joined by Cooper, to dissect the first major of the year from Augusta, where for a couple of hours on Sunday, it looked like we were in for a ripper of a finish. Four of them were tied with 12 holes to go. Then Colin Morikawa, the best iron player of his generation, suddenly couldn't hit a green. Max Homa tensed up, airmailed the green on 12, trying not to hit that shot that everyone fears on 12 into the water. Ludvig Åberg did himself proud, but didn't quite have what it took to hang with Scotty. And ultimately, Scheffler got what he deserved with his second master. So looking forward to getting stuck into all of it over the next little while. But Cooper, you were on the hallowed grounds of Augusta. Talk dirty to me. What was that experience like?
I know it's everyone kind of, and before I went, everyone who had been, and when you ask them that question, they're like, oh, no, yeah, you'll understand when you're there. And I kind of, it sounds like a fairly cliche remark, but it's the real deal. Just things like the scale of the course. It's kind of like, I know you weren't at the JP Pro-Am and Joan Daver down there, but when you walk past the clubhouse in Adair, and you can kind of see the first tee and the course opens up, like it's the same kind of feeling in terms of you walk past or down through the kind of, I guess, the fan, not fan village, but it's like a communal area, and then the big master scoreboard with the flags, the famous one, is on the right, and suddenly you can nearly see all the way down to fucking 12. You can see all the way down to basically the crowds on 16 about a mile away in the distance. Like, it's just an incredible bit of land. And the undulations are properly, that you get a bit taken aback by it. Like, as in you come out that chute by the leaderboard and you walk up to the first tee, it's like a 45% incline. Like there's about a 50, 60 foot drop after the first tee box. And that carries the whole way nearly to the front of the fairway on one. So like I know it's about, I don't know what the carry is, 180, 200 to the front of the fairway, but there is an absolute chasm in front of you that you just don't really see on TV.
I didn't even think to know about that.
Yeah, like that's the main walkway over to the ninth fairway, and then you can walk across. You can take a left to 18, or you can keep going on down to the back.
It makes sense. Sorry to cut across you, but like, I know hitting up on the second shot on 9 is way uphill, so it makes sense. So those holes kind of adjacent, they run side by side, so that
right, chasm right beside each other. One thing actually I couldn't believe was how close the 9th and 18th greens are. They're 10 yards away from each other,
really. Like,
and then on 18, when you're watching on TV, you don't see one at all. But it's right behind the crowd, just to the left of the green. The ninth green. And then the first tee box is another 15, 20 yards behind the ninth green. Like, it's all really, really close. But again, I guess they've spent long enough measuring out the camera angles for TV to basically focus on one hole and not make it look like they're on top of each other. But they are very, very close. But even 9, that shot on 9, like the second shot, if you're short and you have a bit of zip on it, that thing can literally come 50 yards back down the fairway. Like, it's the same kind of incline. It's the same hill as the walk up to the first tee. It's literally 45 degrees, if not steeper. But the one that really, really took me by surprise was 10. Like, I know it's a downhill, dogleg left. I know there's a bit of a plateau there where the drives kind of level out. The ball's still going to be above your feet for the right-handers, but like, it's it doesn't, that you don't really, it's a fucking ski slope basically. Like, it is straight down. It's probably like 70 75 degrees decline down to that first kind of, I guess, landing area where you might, I don't know, hit a three wood or a, if you hit it out to the right, it kind of flattens out. And even from there, you've got about 180, 200 in, and there's still a 100-foot drop in front of you. Like, it's, yeah, it, that 10 was the one that kind of, when we were walking down it, I was like, this is fucking mental. Even the bunker short of 10, the one about 10 yards short, yeah, that's its own little mountain. Like, if you carry that bunker, there's another 30-foot drop behind the bunker before the runoff up to the green. Yeah, 10, I think when 10 of all of them, 10 was the one that I was like, this is nothing like, not, I wasn't even close to understanding how difficult that hole is. And not even difficult, I just mean, like, even when you're walking around, there's no, you're always like trying to keep your balance.
You can understand why, like, say for Tiger, it's obviously taking it out on its body. Like, it is a tough walk around, yeah?
Really, really tough walk around. Like, you'd think of the likes of John Daly playing, and you're like, how the fuck did this, like, around here? It's just, it's definitely, I tried to think of, like, an equivalent in Ireland, and it probably is something like Mount Juliet or one of those kind of championship courses where there's, I guess, a 2-minute walk to the next tee. That kind of, but there isn't in Augusta. The tees are actually relatively close to the greens, but just those kind of walks around and up and over hills around the back of kind of, I guess, fairly open greens, that it's just like, this is a fucking absolute trek of a walk around. But yeah, I know it was good. And 8 as well was a bit shocking, like, as in the landing area just short of the kind of walkway across the fairway for the patrons is, when you look up that fairway, like, if you hit it 350 off the tee, you'd be around the walkway. And that's kind of where we were standing. And if you look up towards the green, you just have two big fucking mountains in front of you. You can't see a thing. And you, if you are hitting the wood into that, which you probably are trying to sling one right to left, you have to get it up in the air immediately. Like, there's, you're, if you're not hitting a 5-wood and just putting it into the sky, you're gonna hit the hill in front of you. I think that's maybe it's just because of the coverage, you don't see lads, but I'd be very surprised if lads don't get it up in the air fast enough and just hit hills in front of them a lot of the time.
Hit a groove too low on the face, and it just, it doesn't carry. And so in terms of, like, how impressive it actually is, like, what was it incredibly manicured, and, like, what holes stood out to you? Like, I presume you got a good look at the likes of 12 and 16, yeah, and then a couple of par fives on the back nine. Like, how impressive are they?
Yeah, it's so Amen Corner is a good example. 11, the tee box is so far back, and it's so narrow through that chute. Like, to cut one around the corner to give yourself a good angle in at the green and take the water as much out of it as you can, that is like a fucking needle, like threading a needle. It's
got to be so really, brave. Really,
it doesn't look that tight on TV. It looks like you can hit it straight and you'll be fine. That is, one of the, bar 18. 18 is the, that was, I stood
behind. How narrow is 18? Because I often think, like, imagine, like,
it's fucking, like, you see lads just pipe one down the middle and maybe take driver out and say, fuck it, if it goes in the bunker, what's the worst thing that can happen? But hitting it through the fucking trees is an achievement in itself. Like, it is, when you see who was, like, Bryson on Friday, or maybe Saturday, when he holed out on 18, I wasn't there for that now, but when he pushed it right off the tee into the shit, it's like, that is so easy. Like, if you push or pull it at all, you could be hitting branches. So it's a new appreciation for that as well. But 11, then, the the lake is actually tiny left of the green. It's not a big lake at all. It's very small, but all the ground around it kind of feeds into it. And as soon as you get to the edge, it's straight down. There's no, it's like short of 15. It's just a fucking, if your ball even goes an inch over it, it's going the whole way down into it. So you can see, especially, I guess, on Sunday when Oberg and a few of the lads fell victim to it. Like, it's not a particularly bad shot that winds you up in there. It's if you're in the wrong position, anything less than a perfect shot onto the green, you're probably getting wet. As far as the opening to Amen Corner goes, I kind of now see that 11 is, you kind of think 12, 13 is like, you have to drive it well or else you're laying up and then maybe you'll get up and down depending on where the pin is. I would have thought 11 was, you just need to play it out to the right and try and get up and down and get away with a par. And then 12 is the tough one. 11 is the real killer on those three holes. Like, it is fucking from the drive to the approach to the green, all slanting kind of back, front, right to left as well towards the water. It's pretty taunting. I don't know what I'd do if I was playing it, but it would probably be just a piss missile up the middle through the trees, a fucking layup, and then a try and get an up and down, because it's
a long hole. It's like 500 yards. Yeah,
it's a beast. Yeah, like, that's what I mean, as in I genuinely, if you're playing a medal there, you're fucking, there's no way you're going near the water, because your drop then is an even more terrifying shot.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to carry it the whole way to the green, especially to a short left pin. You've no fucking chance of getting it anywhere near it. But yeah, 11 was pretty impressive. Jess spent a good bit of time just behind 12. Like, 12 is, it's one of the few holes in Augusta that is exactly as you picture it. Like, and maybe that's because you can't go around the back of the green, or you can't see any different perspectives, or all the TV angles are from that side. But it is just the most perfect place in the world. Like, if I was going for 4 days, I would spend one entire day just fucking sitting behind 12.
What is it? Talk me through, like, that moment or that hour or two, however long you spent behind 12. So you just sipping on a few beers, looking at the Masters from behind the 12th tee. Like, how incredible is that?
Yeah, it's hard to put into words. It genuinely a bit fucking emotional, because you spend most of your life watching people hit on this hole, and all the stories that have kind of basically started around there, all the implosions or all the great shots. Even when I was walking around with Dad, we walked down right at 10, and I was trying to pick out where Bubba hit that amazing kind of hook around the corner in the playoff. Like, every few paces you go, you're like, oh, do you remember when fucking Tiger did this in 06 or 05? But that's the beauty of, I guess, the it being there every year. Like, every year there's, and if you're watching a lot of golf, it's like a highlight reel in your head for every hole. It's like, oh Jesus, do you remember Phil fucking stuck it on the bunker from there, Jesus, 220 back, what a shot. Like, because it's the exact same fucking course nearly. But actually right behind 12, so there's kind of a grandstand and then a slope where you can put your master's kind of chair. And right behind the grandstand is a concession area, which you don't see on TV. Like, just about 10 yards. Do you know where you miss right on 13, the pines?
Yeah.
Another 20 yards right of that is a full-on concession stand.
Right. Like, so that's where people are getting their beers and their pimento cheese sandwiches.
The perfect place to spend 10 fucking hours. Like, my round for beers is go up and get some pimento cheese sandwiches, fucking two beers for what is it, about $15 for
really? So it actually is that cheap.
Yeah, the pimentos are $1.50 and life-changing stuff. Like,
are they actually nice? Yeah,
they're absolutely gorgeous. I'd be worried to admit how many I had of them. I think I tried everything. Like, as in that the first time I went in, I completely just lost the head and ordered fucking six or seven things. And sorry, it's not ordering. Like it's like you're walking up to the checkout in a Centra. Like you just pick up the bagged sandwiches and the crisps
is it packed?
Just constantly been flowing in as well, as in poured and left out to pick up. Then just go up to the till, you put everything down, you tap, and you're out. Like it's an incredibly efficient flow of people. Like you're not waiting too long for anything.
What about beers? Like, because I presume you can't.
Yeah. It's the exact same, but they're pouring the beers, putting them beside. I just kept drinking the domestic import lager. I think it was $6 or something. And they just put them there, and you have your sandwiches in your hand. You pick up two beers that are ready to go. You go up to the till, you tap. Like it's, it's not their first rodeo.
Yeah. Wow. Because like you just think, what I'd be so worried about going to the Masters is that you'd be just a bit disappointed, like that maybe it just wouldn't quite live up to the expectation. But by the sounds of it, like it absolutely did.
I can promise you, unless you got, now it was very fucking windy. I don't know on TV, I didn't watch back kind of the Thursday round, but it was very, very windy. Like the massive pine trees around you are moving, like proper swaying. Do you remember, was it a few years ago, there was a big, was it 17? One of the trees collapsed.
Yeah, I do remember this.
I can totally see how that could have happened very easily on even Wednesday, Thursday. But actually one really interesting thing is there is fucking no rough. Like there's literally
the
worst rough is about, like 2 inches is probably even being too dramatic. Like you'd still probably get a decent lie if you went into the worst bit of rough between some of the fairways. But it all comes back to that, like Bobby Jones thing. It's like he doesn't want to really punish a wayward drive. You're going to find your ball. It's going to be very hittable, but you've absolutely no chance of hitting the green. So you're going to have to pitch out. But if you do flush one, it's going to reward that second shot just based on how good the first one was. So yeah, I can see how lads would really struggle off the tee if you weren't hitting fairways. But for me and you to go out there, like we'd still enjoy it. Like it won't.
Yeah, okay.
It's not like some of the course now. And then Sea Point Baltrae, maybe it's just Lynx Golf. When the rough is up, you're hitting provisionals everywhere. Like you would never have to hit a provisional in Augusta. You know it's in the water, because if it goes near one of the lakes, it's gone. And if you block it 100 yards right off a fairway, off a tee, you're going to find it on the other fairway. Like it's...
Yeah. So you're not losing golf. Because that's interesting. Like, so when I remember Joe and me went to the PGA at Whistling Straits in 2015, the year Jason Day won. And Jason Day shot like 20 under par that week. And I remember standing up on the first tee of that golf course. And I don't know if you remember much of Whistling Straits and the details, but obviously Ryder Cup was on there a couple of years
ago. Yeah.
I remember if you missed the fairway, it was like a massive drop off on either side and you were just dead. And I just looked at the course and said, like, if you're like an 18 handicap and you're going to hit some wayward tee shots, like, you're screwed. Like it seemed like such a penalizing golf course. And I was just looking at it. I don't know how Jason Day is shooting 20 under par in this golf course. I would shoot like as a 5-6 handicap. I doubt I'd break 90. And it's impossible to know until you actually are playing and then you get a better feel for it. And like, maybe it's a stupid question to ask, but like when you're looking at Augusta, say back tees like that, have you any indication of what, like how difficult it would be and what you could shoot? You're a scratch handicap, like.
Yeah, like from the tee, I don't think it would be one of the hardest courses in the world. And maybe that's like absolute bollocks talk, but like if you trust your driver, as in you're getting it off relatively straight and consistent and carrying at least 280, it's not the worst course in the world from the tee. But the shots in, like every fucking green, And I think that's where the amateurs would really struggle, is the lack of, I guess, spin control. Because if you, the one really that I couldn't believe, the second shot in was seven. So with the, you have to get that drive straight or else it's rolling off to the right and you're behind trees and you've no fucking chance of hitting the green. You're just probably aiming for a bunker and trying to get up and down. But the shot in from the fairway is probably about one, good drive is about 180. And like, I know the pros are probably, Bryson would be hitting a fucking lob wedge, but most pros will probably be hitting a kind of eight, depending on the wind, maybe a seven. And you have to carry those two. All you can see is the bunkers, like two massive white faces in front of the green. And if the pin is at the front there, you need to carry it the whole way and then stop it pretty much straight away. Or else you're running up to the back of the green and you've the fastest putt in the world coming back down. Like, it's the control of the irons and wedges is how you play Augusta. And I guess that's, I get when you hear pros talk about what's the best way to lower your handicap, it's like practice your wedges, because it's the long game, it's obviously going to be tough and it's very narrow, and if you're out of position you're fucked. Like, you're not getting, you're looking at bogey straight away. It's double bogey avoidance if you're missing the tee shots. But it is really about how well you're able to control, not only control as in stop it quick enough and not just be landing on the front of the green and run to the back, but for the pros then controlling the backspin as well. Because I think so, we were watching Aladabal, Sergio and Ram were playing on Wednesday, just going up nine together, and Sergio was kind of good position off the tee, he was on a bit of a bit relatively flat bit of land, like he wasn't on the downslope, and he hit one into, I think the pin was in the front on the Wednesday just on the practice round, and it looked like a fucking great shot, and you can't see, like, we were kind of down around their level, so you can just about see the pin, and next thing a ball re-emerges fucking just zipping back off the green 20 yards short. He throws down another ball, like, as in probably a perfect shot in the air all over the pin. Next thing he's looking at a really, really tricky 20 yard pitch back up the hill. Like, it not that it punishes good shots, but if you don't have full control of the ball, you are at nothing at Augusta.
So the higher handicaps are really going to struggle there. Like, yeah, maybe relatively tame off the tee.
If you got the chance to play Augusta with a few of your mates and you weren't, if you weren't like elite amateurs or professionals, you're better off playing a scramble because you won't enjoy shooting around Augusta.
And tell me, what about the town of Augusta and around it? I know you weren't necessarily staying that close, but like, what was the vibes you got from the area around Augusta?
No, we stayed. So on the Tuesday night we stayed. So we were over at my uncle in North Carolina, kind of Raleigh. So it's about an hour east of Pinehurst area. Played golf there in the Monday, actually, not in Pinehurst, in that general area though. Amazing courses, like just similar to Pinehurst, just massive tree-lined championship course, fucking semi-private, $40. Like, golf over there is actually quite good if you're not playing the creme top, de la creme. Top dogs, creme de la creme, yeah. Then we drove down to a place called Greenwood. It's been an hour outside of Augusta, just because it was a 4.5 hour drive, so we broke it up. Then stayed in Augusta in an Airbnb, kind of close enough to downtown, about 15 minutes from the course. So it was actually fine. Augusta itself, like, there's a Hooters 300 yards from Magnolia Lane. Like, it's when you come off the highway into Augusta, you'll be at the golf course and in the parking within 2 minutes. Like, it's outside of the downtown Augusta. It's kind of near the highway exit. And yeah, like, we went in, I think we met a heap of Irish lads in the Hooters while we were there.
Oh, yeah.
classic fucking all the lads. Where's open latest here? No, I met some, I had some real characters down there, and yeah, it was a proper session. Like, you'd see lads, so you got to, when you bought a beer, it came in like one of those plastic Master's cups.
And, oh, like, yeah.
You had lads, absolute fucking warriors, walking around with 20 cups. Now, I don't know if they drank 20 beers, but they were going home with like 20 of these cups to obviously set up at home. But like, it was the weather was really good, nice cold beers, and then after a long day of walking, you're in for some heavy pints afterwards. There was a place called the World of Beer across the road, really good food. I wouldn't eat in Hooters, like it's dog shit. So it's nice to have another food joint 50 yards away in a place like that. But yeah, I know it's not until you go into the gates, and it's, to be fair, as soon as you go in the gates, even the fucking stones are painted green. Like, everything is absolute. There isn't a flare out of place. Like,
attention to detail.
But yeah, like once you get inside the gates, it's a different world. A totally different world. We actually, when we arrived first on the Wednesday, you kind of have to obviously leave your phone in the truck, or bring it or drop it into a check-in point, and you scan the tickets, walk down a lane, again, just pristine fucking, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like that all year, but like, it is just perfect. Like, I know they do it, or they try and get the flowers to bloom at the right time, but like, it's pretty incredible when you're walking down, and then where the I guess the studios are for the McGinleys and the lads, that's facing out towards the practice green. So you kind of come in,
from
your stand anyway, you come in just to the right of them, and then it's all the chipping greens and driving range on the left. And we walked in, and the first person we saw chipping on his own with about three people watching him was Tiger. And just stood there in awe for about 20 minutes, like, fuck, I really better move on and see the rest of the course here. But yeah, it's
yeah, but how often do you get to watch Tiger practicing his chipping at Augusta? You know, like, you could do that and you'd say the trip was a success.
Oh, I could have left. Yeah, happy enough. Come back next year. But no, what, like, even watching him practice to one of the chipping greens, he'd put down five balls, and with the same club, he tried three different flights, two different spin types. Like, that's all Augusta's all about. Like, anyone can get up and around the green in two if you hit two straight shots, but you're either scoring at Augusta or you're shooting 90 based on how well you're chipping around the green or how good your wedges are. But then just like, it's all the practice green on the left. You get down to the middle, and then you take a right down by the merch store, which is a fucking incredible thing in itself. About a 40-minute wait for that, which was, I guess, expected. But yeah, like, they don't ride you in there. Like, anything I got,
oh, really?
Probably, if you're looking at a quarter zip in your local pro shop, it's probably $120. I think the quarter zips in there are $129. So I'd say it's nearly identical to the average kind of championship course pro shop in terms of what the gear is. But you could get scented candles, fucking dog bowls, like whatever you want, they have it. But
no, yeah,
the whole thing inside is, it's nothing like the town of Augusta, but you can tell that if Augusta National wasn't there, like, Augusta as a town might not even exist.
Yeah, the whole town economy is probably built around it.
Absolutely.
And I know we should actually talk a little bit about the golf, but I could talk about this stuff all day. But anyone in particular, like, impress you more so than others in terms of players?
I actually saw Shipley, the amateur, playing a bit on the Wednesday, and he absolutely flushes it. Fucking real, like, beautiful sound when he hits a kind of low to mid iron. I think he was playing with DJ and Zach Johnson, which is a weird little treble.
Zach Johnson went viral for telling the crowd to fuck off. He said he didn't tell them to fuck off. He
was I saw that was such a lie. Like, he's a fucking, it's a hilarious to fall from grace, as in taking over an unbeatable US team and now he's villain number one. Like, it's he's an arsehole anyway.
And clearly, who impressed you?
But I know Oberg is, I saw him in Rome at the Ryder Cup and he was impressive. And just at the Masters again, like, he's way, I think, I don't know, I didn't think he was small, but like, do you know the way you look at JT and Rory and you're like, ah, they're normal lads, but they're actually tiny. And then you look at Oberg and it's like, I know, he's a normal lad. Like, he must be 6'2 or 3. He's a fucking unit of a man. And his swing, like, the speed he takes it back, I think when you see it in front of you, you'd nearly, if you were playing around with him and he had a few bad drives out in C point, you'd be like, ah, maybe just slow it down there in the backswing a wee bit. He properly rips it back. And to be fair, like, as a swing, it's very straightforward. There's no wrist hinges. There's no fucking mad twists. It just seems like the most repeatable thing in the world. But he absolutely smashes it. Who else? McIlroy obviously is just a joy to watch when he lets the driver out. Tiger looked really well. Like, he's really swinging at it. Like, I know he had a shit Saturday, but as far as like keeping up with the lads, so he's out driving most lads he's playing with. He's absolutely fucking ripping the ball around.
Really? So he seemed like he was actually hitting it past his playing partners.
Yeah, he still looks like he's limping. Not limping, like tentatively walking.
Yeah, and you can see it on TV.
Yeah, but when he stands over a golf ball, he's absolutely A1. So, like, I'd even be thinking, especially after seeing it, if he can do four rounds in Augusta, he can do four rounds anywhere, genuinely. Like, it's as far as walking around a course, that is, you'd be wrecked after, like. So you need a pit stop and a concession stand after walking from the first down to the fucking 16th, and like walking back up then is a whole different story. But if you're playing golf and constantly going up and down, I can see, I totally understand now why a lot of the players only play nine on some days. Like, they might play front nine on a Monday or Tuesday, back nine on a Wednesday, because it's, you'd be absolutely shattered if you played 18 holes there 5-6 days in a row. No one, like I was saying, you just see everyone else, but over 100%. I think maybe I went out to look for him as well, because I just wanted to see him because I really fancied him. Morikawa's irons, actually, I'd never seen that in the flesh. Fucking,
how good is that?
Oh, it's fucking, yeah. And he was backstripe. Like, he's had a shit year with the irons, and something obviously clicked last week. And this week, he's obviously found out what the issue was. But yeah, he really, the speed he fucking flies through the mat, and he doesn't seem to miss the center of the face at all. Like, it's pure. It's like when you strike off a tee and it just comes out perfect, fucking straight and center. But he just seems to do it for every shot.
I would, if there was a man whose swing I could copy, Morikawa, just in that little cute cut everywhere. Right, just to actually talk a little bit about the golf. So Scheffler, obviously, like, not to jump on the train and compare Scotty to Tiger in an overall sense, but from the perspective of intimidation, I think you, me, everyone, all the players watching would have just known that he wasn't going to falter. It just seemed like he suffocated them. Like, it felt like Tiger back in the day when players would just drop like flies on the back nine on Sunday.
Yeah, well, they did one by one. Morikawa, Homa, Oberg all fucked it up at Amen Corner, like straight up, as in that was the turning point. Just one note on that. Oberg again, just absolutely fanboying over him, but the way he reacted to going in the water on 11 was exactly what you want to see from a young lad. Like, that would have emotionally destroyed most people, and he just fucking smiles it off, laughs it off. Like, and then goes on and birdies two on the way in to finish second. Like, it was, yeah, just he's going to win more majors than Rory at this stage. Like, it's I don't know what the odds are for him to win one in the rest this year, but I'd be fairly disappointed if he doesn't come out as a major winner by the end of 2024. But Scotty is, yeah, he's just a freak. I think JT actually said in an interview this week, he's like, no disrespect to Scotty, but it's so boring. Like, he's just so consistent.
Yeah.
And like, he fucked up. What was it? Was it seven? Or eight? He doubled.
Yeah. Around that time, they were all kind of neck and neck at 600.
Suddenly you're looking at four lads at 600. Like, right here, we fucking go back nine on Sunday at Augusta. And then he just reverts back to hitting fairways, hitting greens, two putting, holding putts. Like, it's just
slowly tipping up the leaderboard. And like, as I said, it just seemed like he suffocated the rest of them. Like, Homa, the others seemed to kind of drop pretty quickly off. And then at one point, when Homa was stood on 12, he seemed to be the player carrying the weight of the tournament on him. So, like, he is clearly someone that's...
The excitement alive for the back nine.
Say that again?
The man who was trying to keep the excitement alive in the back nine.
Yeah, he literally was. And, like, you know, you've got a player here who's under-delivered at the majors, never really done anything, but then here he is living up to his potential. He walks up to the 12th tee to an ovation, and here was the moment that every kid dreams on the range, suddenly at the Masters, best par three in the world, chance to chase down the number one player in the world, and then hits that nine iron and, like, didn't hit that bad a shot. Like, because the shot that everyone hits at the 12th that messes up is that one that goes short right into the water, tournament over. And he didn't hit that bad a shot. Like, took it all over the line of the bunker, maybe a slight pull, went an extra 5 yards too long, and then takes this terrible hop into the shrubs. And it just felt like that was the tournament over when Homa hit that shot into the bushes on 12. And then it's kind of like, okay, here, that's kind of it.
Yeah, like, just on Homa as well, he is a unit of a man too. Didn't realize. Oh, yeah? Yeah, absolutely. I just didn't follow him enough from Rome, but watching him walk up Augusta, he's a fucking big guy. But yeah, like, as in Jack Nicklaus always says, just over the bunker, middle of the green on 12 on Sunday. So I think I don't think he was going for the pin. I think that's exactly what he was trying to do. And as you said, just tugged it a little bit. But yeah, it could be a case of, if you're playing golf and you block one right OB and the next one is a snap hook left, like, it could have just been a complete do anything but go short right and fuck this up. And yeah, I know what it is. It was a shot that I'm not sure if he would have caught him. I'm not even sure if Hoberg would have won if he didn't go in the water on 11. But if you have that shot in your head, I'd say that's one that's going to sting for a while, because whether or not he would have won, it was probably a shot that he'll look back on. As you said, he was in the hunt for his first major at Augusta, chasing down the fucking Tiger kind of man in form, and didn't pull it off. So I don't think it'll faze him. Like, he's a cool, calm, collected guy. But yeah, I'd say he's pretty disappointed that night, kind of thinking, oh, fuck's sake, I should have gone for it. Like, something other than, there's nothing worse than taking an iron out on a drivable par four and then fucking putting in the rough. Like, I tried to be smart and it didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't want to lose the wrong, or you don't want to learn the wrong lesson. Like, he put himself in position, and like, he was so consistently, he was just right there. And then he played the sensible shot over that bunker on 12. And ultimately, that's when, just suddenly out of nowhere, from four of them being in contention, as you say, around Amen Corner, everything just changed. And Hoberg obviously hits that shot into the water on 11. And I wonder, in a way, did that kind of relax him? And like, Scheffler was pulling away and Hoberg had nothing to lose. And he just kind of tipped along, made a couple of birdies on the way in. But
that's the reaction you want from someone like him. Like, it's like, fuck, I've nothing to lose now, as opposed to, oh, fuck, I'm the worst player in the world and bogeying every hole on the way in. Like, it's a good response to it, or good to see him at, what is he, 23, 24, to be that mature about it already should be a frightening prospect for the rest
of the year. What a performance. Like, this guy, Oberg, wasn't even a pro this time last year. Like,
yeah.
he's won a Ryder Cup. He's won on each tour now. He's seventh in the official world rankings, but Data Golf has him as the fourth best player in the world. I wonder, this is just playing devil's advocate, like, sometimes players seem to peak a lot earlier these days, coming out of college, winning everything, full of beans. Mm-hmm. Like, you think of Jordan Spieth, came in and in his early days, like, he was at his best when he was 21, like, when he won everything and like, I wonder now, Åberg seems to have such good technique and fundamentals and his temperament and everything just seems so good. But, like, I wonder if there's a case at all for, like, the likes of Åberg. He, all the way up through his life, he has been top dog, beating everyone. And winning is a habit. And getting out of college, smashing everyone, gets on tour, and he's obviously just riding this high, ultra confident, comes to the second major, or first major ever, comes second. Like, I wonder at some point, will the grind of the PGA Tour, of suddenly not being top dog and looking around saying you're no longer this big fish in a small pond, I wonder, will that catch up with him, or is he just going to be like as good as his potential looks?
Yeah, like, when you're talking about him, as to all the points you made, and to even put a cherry on top, like, to own the highest ever winning margin at a Ryder Cup when him and Hovland smashed Scheffler and Koepka. Like, he's just, everything he touches turns to gold. And I do think, like, when you're talking about, especially the young lads, take the Ricky, when he came out of college with that fucking flat swing. Speed even as well. Speed swing, I remember watching him at Adair Manor at the JP, and it seems like he's thinking about where his hands have to be when he pulls it back. Like, it's not just simple. JT doesn't really follow that. JT swing is really pure, but they all came on the scene shit hot and, yeah, burnt out really. But I don't think Åberg is like that. But to your point, does he have the tiger mentality of, like, I have to win, I'm coming here to win? And I think he does. Maybe he's just not as arrogant or as public with his arrogance as Tiger was back then, but you do need that. I'm not just showing up here to keep my card or to get a few top tens. Like, you have to be going in to fucking win it every week. Scotty is the exception to that rule, because God seems to decide where he's going to finish before he even tees up at the start of the week.
God bless, like, God.
But, like, with Åberg now following a very similar trajectory in terms of Tiger after Stanford, and hopefully now going on and properly fulfilling his potential, I think he will. And I just think that I think his swing has a lot to do with it. Like, it is just, there's so much power with, like, seemingly so little effort. So if he can keep putting, like, he actually, his putting isn't very good. He's outside the top 70, I think, in putting.
Yeah, and he had an exceptional week putting at the Masters. I was looking at Data Golf earlier, and so his two previous tournaments, he lost strokes to the field in Valero Texas Open and the Players. He was kind of just slightly losing strokes, and then at the Masters, he gained just over two shots on the field in putting, which is a very significant gain.
So, yeah, and to do that at Augusta on your first trip is fucking crazy. Yeah.
So look, we'll see. Rory, look, just, I don't think the hopes were high going in.
It wasn't high going in March, and then as soon as April arrived, he's going to win the green jacket.
But he didn't take himself out of it on the first day, which is what he's done. But he did on the second day, like the Friday.
I backed him after round one because I was expecting him to be seven shots back. And I was like, oh my God, here we go. But no, I genuinely don't think there's any point in us talking about Rory McIlroy in the pod ever again until he changes caddy. Like, it's just, he's literally on his own out there. He's playing against.
But did you get that impression from watching him up close? Like, was there anything else from being there that gave you that impression?
No, not at all. Like, you see it on TV because, like, he has someone carrying his bag. Like, he doesn't have a caddy. He has a chauffeur for his clubs. Like, it's not. No disrespect to Harry. Like, he's obviously out there mapping the course, getting the yardages, giving them the numbers. But they're not a team. It's Rory McIlroy versus Spieth and Greller versus all the combos of lads. Like, even Fleetwood, I know he wasn't really in contention, but he finished top three. And it's because he kind of I can't remember your man's name, the local cat who had to jump in last minute. Mm. But like, that guy knows greens and Augusta like the back of his hand. He knows where to go. He knows where not to go. Like, he's the perfect caddy for going around at Augusta. I'd say if Rory had him on the bag, he would have had a better shot of winning than Harry Diamond.
Do you not think, I just think looking at Rory, he just didn't have it. His swing, like, I looked at him on the Friday and he battled really hard, in fairness to him. I was kind of watching him and I was very disappointed for him on the Friday because, you know, we've all been out in the golf course where you're just not swinging it well. He just kept missing greens and he was battling, trying to get up and down. And I'm sure I actually got the impression that his head wasn't spinning like it was last year. I kind of just felt that he was battling away. Conditions on the Friday seemed really tough. Didn't have his golf thing. Like, if you're looking at the difference between him and Scottie Scheffler, for example, like, they were just worlds apart. Like, Scheffler was just hitting far better shots than Rory was. He just didn't have it. I mean,
I'm not saying he gets a new caddy and he fucking wins five in a row. I just mean when it comes down, when he gets into the hunt of these events, he needs someone there with him, like helping him. Not helping him, but like fucking, he makes a double bogey and someone not saying, oh, unlucky Rory, you played really well. Like, someone who's ready to fucking give him a dig and say, come on to fuck, we're going to win this tournament. And I just don't think he gets that. If a decade without majors doesn't wake you up, nothing will. So if there was a market for Rory McIlroy to never win a major again, I'd probably put a few quid on it. Because he doesn't seem to want to change. He's happy enough winning FedEx Cups that no one cares about. And
do you believe that? Do you think he's actually happy with that? Or do you think he's tortured inside because of it?
Oh, I'd say he's absolutely tortured. Which is why it's so confusing that he won't make a change. It makes absolutely no sense. It's like, if you're running a business and something, that one part of the business is losing you most of your money every year, you fucking cut that. Like, it's very easy to identify what it is. And I know it's intangible to say, oh, it's because I don't have a good caddy. But if you can't see exactly what the problem is, you change a few things. Then you A/B test to see what the issue was or what might help. Mm-hmm. Move in the right direction, and he's kept it the same. Like it's not his fucking swing. And as far as easy things to potentially make a quick difference, getting someone like a Bones, it won't be Bones after Ryder Cup, but like getting an experienced caddy on the bag,
it would be a very interesting
experienced caddy. It has to be someone who's going to stand up to him and kind of force the golf out of him.
It would be so cool to see if Stevie Williams jumped on the bag with him.
Yeah, Stevie Williams, put him on, like, genuinely.
I was saying a few weeks ago that, like, sorry, I'm not suggesting that that's necessarily what he should do, because like the caddy thing, yeah, I know that's your gripe, not necessarily mine. And I said a few weeks ago on the pod that Stevie Williams and Tiger were a good match, and they may not be a good match, Rory and Stevie Williams. But yeah, it certainly would be an interesting experiment to see.
Even take Ted, what's his name,
Ted Scott.
He was on the bag for Scotty. Ted Scott. Like, he was on the bag for Adam Scott when he won the Masters. So, like, he has, like...
Stevie was on the bag for Adam Scott when he won the Masters.
Oh, no. Who was Ted Scott on the bag for?
Oh, Bubba.
Bubba. But, like, he's won a Masters before, so he's a fucking veteran around the...
Yeah.
On tour. And then he goes to Scotty, because Scotty's like, I don't just want a mate on the bag. Scotty could easily put one of his fucking mates on the bag, who's a scratch golfer. But he wants a caddy. He doesn't want a mate. He wants to be able to chill with his mates afterwards and have a beer. Not for them to walk around the golf course with him while he's playing golf. Like, I don't know who it is. Steve Williams would be cool. Like, someone like Ted Scott would be perfect. Like, just to see. Just do it for fucking 6 months. Yeah. Don't do it now. Like, at the end of the major season, get someone in the bag, get used to them over the winter, and then see how Masters goes next year. If it doesn't work after a year, maybe give it 2 years. Fuck it, try something else. Maybe it wasn't Harry. But the fact that he's not changing anything is fucking scary, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I think it would certainly be an interesting one. I'm conscious we are running out of time here. Any final thoughts from the first major of the year before we kind of wrap it up?
No, it was it was good. Like, as in that kind of few minutes, literally just lasted a few minutes of the best players in the world tied going into the back nine at a major was really fucking cool. It's good to be back. And yeah, we've got one every month now coming up. So what are we, Valhalla, yes. USPGA?
Oh, yeah. Is that what the PGA is? Is it back to Valhalla?
Yeah, I think it's Valhalla. Then the US Open is Pinehurst, and then the Open is Troon. So yeah, really few.
Yeah, really right. Nice, so
courses coming up.
Valhalla, that's where Rory won his PGA in 2014. So and then where's the Open on? Is the Open on?
I think it's Royal Troon, isn't it?
I think you could be right. Let me just see. Yeah, it's Troon. Yeah, so that's where Phil and is that where Phil and Stenson had their battle? Stenson won, I think it was. Yeah, and then obviously Harbour Town this week, which we're kind of in the middle of, Scheffler.
It's actually funny. It's like a lot of people were complaining last week. Why is there a signature event after the Masters? And like, they're all going to be tired and they won't get out on course and they won't be able to compete at a high level. Then we have fucking Morikawa over Scheffler off the top again. It was actually a funny, like, this is, it's nearly like saying when Scotty wins this instead of if Scotty wins this. Someone said on Twitter, it's so funny that Steven Yeager is going to be a trivia question answer in 10 years time as the man who stopped Scotty from winning like 20 tournaments in a row.
That's actually a very interesting one. Yeah.
But, yeah, like, is it what is he not gonna win? Like, it's I haven't looked at the odds for the USPGA, but like, if he's not odds on, it fucking lump job, fill the boots.
And I also just think, like, I know we do a bad job of talking about the ladies game at the moment, but
Nelly
Korda, like, Jesus Christ, if anyone is not paying attention to what Nelly Korda is doing at the moment in the ladies game, she is bossing it.
More impressive than Scotty.
Yeah, and there's a golf swing that I absolutely love.
I think Annika Sorensen did something similar to what she's doing right now, assuming she wins Chevron, the ladies major this week. Was it what, win 3 or 4 tournaments in a row and then go and win a major by 8 shots? Like, she's literally copying Annika Sorensen. Like, as in, I know she was away for a bit, but if she can keep this up, it's fucking Tiger-esque, Annika-esque.
Yeah. How many majors has Nelly Korda got? Or has she even won any? I should know that. So she's got 2 anyway. Anyway, she's doing incredible stuff.
Yeah, Leona couldn't follow up match play, but I think Stephanie Meadows still playing well. But yeah, I was hoping Leona would have a big week after finding a bit of form last week.
Well, she has, yeah. So Chevron major coming up, you'd be good to see her do get it like Leona could be very much. Leona could absolutely win a major before Rory does. Right, we'll leave it there. That was very interesting. So good. I know we spent a lot of time talking about your experience with the Masters, but I think that was well worth it.
For anyone who is to listen until the end, I think the tickets for the ballot are opening in June. So just fucking get your mother, father, dog to enter it and get a ticket for the Masters for $100 and build a trip around it. We'll get there next year on the ticket buzz or on the ballot buzz.
Yeah, class. I can't believe I've never even entered that ballot before. I'm 100% going to do it this year.
It only took me 15 years to get picked out of that.
Yeah. Right, Saman, we'll leave it there. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another week of Unplayable. We will chat to you next week.